Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello and welcome to Circling the Bases, proudly presented by RotoWorld and NBC Sports. I'm DJ Short, and with me here is Eric Samulski. We're live on Twitch right now, so thanks for tuning in. And for those of you listening in podcast form or watching later on YouTube, we are recording on Monday afternoon after another busy weekend of MLB action. So we're going to go over news coming out of the weekend, the big headlines, the fantasy relevant headlines, as well as the latest fab run over the weekend, waiver wire pickups of note. Eric, how's it going?
It's going well. You know, as you said, good weekend of baseball. Missed out on some of my fab targets. So, you know, there's that Monday morning feeling of disappointment a little bit. Yeah. But leagues are going well. I think people forget that, you know, there's still some time to climb standings and, yeah, you know, still some time to kind of churn. Especially when, you know, the bottom teams in the league kind of lose focus, you can steal some points pretty quickly in certain categories. So, I'm excited to get to these final months of the season.
Yeah, and it's also interesting, you know, people are running out of fab dollars.
Sure.
So your money goes a lot further now than it did a couple of months ago. And with the trade deadline coming up in a week, that's relevant. If you waited in an only type league, like, that's going to really come in handy.
Yeah. And I know we'll talk about it. There were two, you know, rookie hitters in particular in this fab period. If you were in a league like the NFBC that doesn't allow you to, you know, pick up guys until they debut, who were worth probably putting a chunk of change on. You know, not the Ellie De La Cruz chunk that we saw earlier in the season, but, you know, you had to do that math in your head. It's like, is this guy worth it, or do I need to spec on, you know, somebody after the trade deadline? Historically, I feel like saves are the biggest thing that gets bid on after the trade deadline once, you know, closers move and, you know, you get a new guy in a job. And so I felt pretty good about where I was at in saves in a lot of leagues. So I decided to take the plunge. So we'll see.
So with the NFL season quickly approaching, now is the perfect time to get your RotoWorld Fantasy Football Draft Guide. Get ready for your draft and stay one step ahead of your league during the preseason with updated player rankings, profiles, projections, mock drafts, and more. Go to NBCSports.com/draft guide and use Draft2023, special promo code there, Draft2023, to save 20% at checkout. So go ahead and check that out, NBCSports.com/draft guide. Maybe the biggest news of the weekend is Corey Seager hitting the injured list again, this time with a right thumb sprain. He hurt his hand on a slide into second base. It was on a head first slide on a double against the Dodgers, his former team. Of course, he missed a big chunk of time earlier this year with a left hamstring strain, but that hasn't stopped him from being one of the best players in baseball this season. Seager actually doesn't qualify for the batting title, but if he did, he would lead the league. He's hitting .350, 15 home runs, 58 RBIs in 66 games. So, a key part of that Rangers team Now missing for a little while, Ezekiel Duran was in the starting lineup Sunday at shortstop. And likely Mitch Garver is going to see a lot of time at DH for however long Corey Seager is sidelined. That was where Duran was getting most of his at-bats. So if you need a second catcher, I think in a mixed league, you know, Garver is viable at this point with the playing time there. But no doubt that is a tough blow for the Rangers and for fantasy managers.
Yeah, it's a challenge. And you know, I have him in one league where my middle infielder is Tim Anderson. So it's like technically I have a shortstop replacement, but do I really? Because he's not really given much of anything. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the as you mentioned, Duran has been the natural replacement sliding over to short. So he's not that he was set to lose any playing time, but he won't. And, you know, he'll continue to be in that lineup. I did notice that on Sunday, Brad Miller also resurfaced from the depths. And that may have had something to do with the fact that Adelis Garcia also was out of the lineup Sunday because he got hit with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball in the hand on Saturday. They are just calling him day-to-day, so I don't think that he's going to miss an extended period of time, but it is something to look out for. And the only other note for, you know, that I have from the Rangers lineup is Travis Jankowski moved up to second in the lineup in the two games that Corey Seager's been out. And that's just of note because Jankowski is actually hitting pretty well.
He's had a good year. Yeah.
You know, he's, in the second half of the year, he's hitting just under 300, but he's up over 300 for the year. And then, you know, the steals are kind of like where you're making your hay in fantasy. I mean, you know, he's got 15 stolen bases on the year. So now you've got a guy who's hitting over 300 with 15 steals, who's now going to hit at the top of the lineup. So he'll also give you runs. So you've got a guy who was a two-category contributor who's now can be a three-category contributor. And in deep leagues, you know, I don't think you're not picking him up in your 12-team leagues. But in deep leagues, you know, that's a value boost while Seager's out.
Yeah, and Jankowski makes contact. He gets on base. He does not hit the ball hard at all.
No.
He doesn't have a single barrel in 133 batted balls this season. But sprint speed, 88, so the speed's legit. You'll love the volume near the top of the lineup. He also plays really good defense. So he's been a valuable player for the Rangers this year. And yeah, I mean, I think in a deeper mixed league, he does make sense as a pickup, assuming he stays near the top of the lineup. But let's talk shortstop replacements or middle infielder replacements. Now, shallow-type leagues, Tim Anderson has been a little better recently. Whether that's sustainable, we'll see. He's out there in 41% of Yahoo leagues. Orlando Arcia is available in 48% of leagues. In that Braves lineup, he's been a nice surprise this season. But looking a little bit deeper at fantasy shortstop-eligible players, Michael Garcia, I think we both like him. Jordan Westberg with the Orioles. Zach Neto with the Angels. And then you get a little bit deeper, Mauricio Dubon, Jorge Mateo, who's really tailed off since the start of the season. Luis Garcia with the Nationals. I believe he's eligible at three different positions. So that's kind of what you're looking at. Out of those six names I mentioned, Garcia, Westberg, Neto, Dubon, Mateo, Garcia, who are you liking?
Yeah, I still think it's Michael Garcia. You know, we've talked about him a little bit, and I know, you know, you're not getting a lot of power from him, and the batting average has fluctuated up and down as it usually does with rookies, but he hits the ball hard in the air too, so there is some potential power upside if he were to kind of raise the launch angle, which is, you know, I think like 4 degrees right now. So he doesn't get a lot of barrels and he doesn't hit a lot of home runs, but we know he makes authoritative contact, and we know he can run. He's just going to be locked into at bats in a Royals lineup that isn't great, which is also the downside of, like, you're not getting a ton of runs in RBIs. But I still like that profile. I'm kind of into Willy Castro too, who is available. I'm trying to get this figure right now. He's only rostered in 14% of Yahoo leagues, but he has 23 stolen bases on the year. They move him around all the time. You know, when Polanco comes back, there may be a little bit of playing time crunch, but we're not there yet. And then another name, if you are in a league where you can pick players up like right now, like not an NFBC league, but Ezekiel Tovar is now rostered in under 50% of leagues, and the Rockies play the Nationals for three games on the road, and then they play Oakland at home. So it's a pretty good week for Rockies hitters. And I kind of think like it's just a position where you're going to have to go week by week unless somebody who shouldn't be sitting out there is sitting out there. Shortstop just didn't really have the depth that I think we all thought it was going to at the beginning of the year. And I think you just piece your way through it until Seager comes back.
So you mentioned the Twins situation with Jorge Polanco. Looking at the middle infielder potential replacements, Eddie Julien with the Twins has been ridiculous recently. And I think the Twins have indicated, like, Julian's going to play. He's going to be in that lineup when Polanco comes back. He's been arguably their best hitter recently. Alex Kirilloff has really taken off as well recently. He's a favorite of mine. Trevor Story is on a rehab assignment right now. I think he's worth watching coming back from Tommy John surgery. He's only second base eligible. We'll see what happens there. Wilmer Flores has been one of the hottest hitters in baseball recently. Should probably be playing every day. You know, he's usually known as a lefty masher, but he's been pretty competent against right-handed pitching. This year, he's eligible all over the place, too. So those are more shallow league options, but keep an eye on Story. I'm really interested to see what he'll look like when he gets back.
Yeah, he homered in his first rehab start in AAA. He played five innings at shortstop in that first game. So, you know, I think he is going to play short. You know, the question is just they'll DH him some games, like as they ease him back in. So how quickly does he pick up that shortstop eligibility? But I think that's a good option as well. And then I guess I should also just mention, because I have him on a few teams, but if you're in a deep league, JP Crawford for Seattle is hitting 305 over the last, you know, 30 days over the last 100 plus plate appearances with four home runs. So that's just a batting average, you know, fill in. But another guy, like if you're really struggling in a deep league or maybe an AL only league or something like that, like, you know, JP Crawford is a name that could be of interest to you.
So someone we're probably going to mention later as far as the Fab run is Sal Frelick. Was called up by the Brewers over the weekend. Frelick actually had thumb surgery to begin the year, got a little bit of a late start, but he's number 17 on MLB Pipeline's top 100. The numbers in AAA were not great this year. 247, 333 on base, 342 slug, two homers, eight steals in 40 games, but he is a contact machine. Very good speed as well. Even with the down numbers this year in AAA, 19 walks against 18 strikeouts. He's a 314 hitter over 197 games in the minors. So what we've seen so far in AAA, again, 40 games, small sample, coming back from thumb surgery, not necessarily representative of who he actually is, but 197 games in the minors, 15 home runs. That kind of tells you, you know, kind of the question or maybe limitations to what Frelick could be in fantasy leagues. What's interesting, though, he swung the bat well since coming up. I think he had three hits in his debut. Batted sixth in his debut. Batted cleanup on Sunday. So good lineup real estate and a hitter-friendly ballpark. Where do you fall on Frelick?
Yeah, I'm interested for sure. I mean, I think, you know, especially in on-base leagues, you know, you mentioned that he makes a lot of contact. You know, in 86 games at AAA spread out across last year and this year, he walked more than he struck out. He had an 8.8% walk rate last year in AAA with just a 7.4% strikeout rate. And then this year, even though he wasn't swinging the bat, he wasn't making a lot of like useful contact coming off the injury, still walked 10.4% of the time with a 9.8% strikeout rate. So you've got a guy who has a clear feel for the strike zone. The ability to get the bat on the ball with plus speed. So, you know, in a hitter's park. So some of those, you know, doubles may turn into home runs just, you know, playing in Milwaukee. But that's a boost for you, right? That's a little kind of like cherry on top. You're looking at a guy who might hit high 200s with good stolen base totals. And if they're going to hit him near the middle top of the lineup, we'll see where that kind of lineup position settles. There's some decent run potential there in what I think is still a decent lineup. Hopefully, you know, they get Rowdy Tellez back and he remembers how to hit a baseball. So, that, you know, there's some potential in the second half of the season for the Brewers to like to pick it up a little bit. So, yeah, I think it depends on category needs. Obviously, if you were really if you really needed home runs and RBIs, I don't think Frelick is, you know, your guy for waiver wires. But stolen base and batting average, he's probably, you know, one of the better finds you'll get.
Yeah, I've seen some people throw out the Stephen Kwan comp fantasy wise, and I think that would probably be the best outcome in the short term. If he could have a season like Kwan had last year. Kwan not quite as good this year, but I could see that. That makes sense to me. More Brewers news. Brandon Woodruff on his way back. He's been out for 3 months all season, right shoulder, or most of the season, with a right shoulder strain. He hasn't pitched since April 7th, and he was really good in that start. The velocity readings were good. Three scoreless innings in his first rehab start and high A Wisconsin on Saturday. Only threw 32 pitches, so he's in the process of getting stretched out. It's basically like starting at square one from spring training. So you would say maybe three more rehab starts, probably mid-August or so. But if you've been waiting all this time, and like I said, the velocity readings were great. 97 miles per hour was his top speed there in that start. Can make a huge difference in real life for the Brewers as they're trying to secure the NL Central. But, you know, when it really matters, fantasy playoffs, end of the season, you've been waiting, stashing him in an IL spot, he could be a top 20 starting pitcher the rest of the way.
Yeah, I was really big into Woodruff coming into the year. You know, there was the narrative that I was a part of perpetuating was, you know, he struggled at the beginning of last year when he was dealing with, you know, the issue where he was feeling tingling in his fingers and he couldn't really grip the baseball. And there were just some nerve issues. And once that got settled, you know, for the final like two thirds of the season, he was lights out. I mean, you know, sub three ERA, the same guy that we had seen the year before. So I was really kind of buying in on Woodruff as a clear, like, top 10 starting pitcher this year. Obviously, you know, he's only thrown just over 11 innings while battling that injury, and they were a good 11 innings. So, you know, I'm hoping we're just going to get, you know, high-end production out of him again. I think, you know, if the Brewers are pushing for a playoff spot, as they are right now, you might not see them immediately let him go seven innings out of the you know, out of the gate, right? Even when he comes back, might be a couple 5-inning stints, you know, try to build him up a little bit so he's, you know, fully ready to go come the playoffs if they can qualify. But I think, you know, even if you're getting 5 innings, you're hopefully getting 5 really good innings with solid strikeout numbers. And so if he was dropped anywhere, I'm looking to scoop him immediately because we know he's on track to come back. And, you know, if you are a contending team in a trading league, he might be a guy to go and try to get. You know, you might have a team – he might be on a roster of a team who's out of it, and they've just been holding him in the IL spot because, you know, why not? So, you know, why not make a move? You know, you get a couple good starts from him, he could push you to the top.
So the Braves have made a couple of trades today, kind of more lower-level trades. They picked up Taylor Hearn from the Rangers. I think that's just – optionable depth. I think Hearn has an option left, but Pierce Johnson was an interesting pickup from the Rockies here, and the Braves sent two pretty decent prospects back to the Rockies. Victor Vodnik, who was a starting pitcher, now at this point he's just a reliever, but he's very close to making an impact in the majors. Tanner Gordon, I think he was a 6th round pick of the Braves a couple of years ago. So Vodnik was the number 10 prospect in the Braves system. So I think the Rockies did well here. Pierce Johnson, if you look at his numbers this year, 6 ERA in 43 appearances, but not surprisingly, it's been much better on the road. And just a couple of years from being a very good reliever with the Padres, had a 3.22 ERA in 2021, 2.70 ERA in 2020. So I'm sure the Braves will like turn him into one of the best relievers in baseball here.
As they do. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens the rest of this week. I think it's going to be interesting. Of course, this isn't really jumping off the page fantasy wise, but there was a report from Mark Feinsand of MLB.com this morning. And it said the Reds have told other teams they're willing to trade 2021 NL Rookie of the Year, Jonathan India, for young controllable starting pitching. As we know, the Reds are overflowing with talent, a lot of infielders in their system. So on the roster and on the way. So this is kind of one of those things of, you know, there's some excess there. If they can get some value, they'll be open to it. I've been thinking about this for a little bit, and it's hard for me to find the most obvious fit on the market. Everyone wants young, controllable starting pitching. Right. So, you know, I don't know how seriously to take it, but the Marlins seem like they make some sense. The Dodgers maybe too. But I wonder if you've been thinking about that. But I think he slowed down from a really good start to the season, but I feel like teams should be interested in him.
Yeah, and I see people like, oh, the Reds doing the Reds thing, like, you know, trying to sell off, because India is obviously the most expensive of the, you know, the guys in the infield right now, the Ellie De La Cruz, Matt McClain, Spencer Steer, Encarnacion Strand, because they're literally all rookies are in their second year. But I don't look at it as like the Reds being the Reds. Like, India is a solid starter. You know, I know he's there's the clubhouse factor with him in Cincinnati. He, you know, is viewed as a leader. He is a, you know, 250, 260 big league hitter who will hit 20 home runs and steal, you know, close to 20 bases in a good season for him. And that's totally solid. Like, there's nothing wrong with that profile at all. But it's not like trading away India so that your infield can be Matt McClain, Ellie De La Cruz, Christian Encarnacion Strand is like, you know, giving up, or is the Reds doing what the Reds do? Like, I think India is somebody who will interest other teams, but the Reds are keeping guys who are probably have higher upside than Jonathan India does. You know, the Marlins, I know you mentioned that. To me, it's like, I don't know where Luis Arraez plays other than second base. I mean, you know, the Twins moved him to first. Because he was a pretty mediocre defender, so the Marlins could do the same thing. The Dodgers seem like a natural fit. You know, I would say, you know, the Giants have the Tyro Estrada injury. I know he's, you know, I think he's on the way back, so that might not be a fit. You know, you look at contending teams, like the Diamondbacks aren't really making that move because of Marte. You know, could the Phillies? I don't really know. I mean, the Braves are set there. So, you know, and Bryson Stott's been playing well for the Phillies, so it wouldn't be them. I just don't – there's not any clear-cut fit here. The Brewers could use some help, but they're not going to make that trade because, you know, they're competing for the same exact spot. Sure. So I don't know. I'll be interested to see where he winds up. I think that he's a talented player who I think will see a dip in production moving out of that ballpark. I think that ballpark has probably helped the home runs a little bit. You know, an interesting thing I've heard that the Guardians could be buyers. I wonder if there would be any thought to, like, they have a lot of young controllable pitching. I wonder if there'd be any thought to, you know, moving Jimenez back to shortstop and putting India at second. Ahmed Rosario has been fine, but, you know, I don't think Ahmed Rosario should be blocking you from trying to upgrade your lineup.
Yeah, especially the Guardians, who need all the help they can get offensively. So just a quick note for our listeners. It's a star-studded battle this Sunday on MLB. Leadoff as Shohei Ohtani and the Angels. Hopefully Ohtani will still be there. Travel north of the border to face Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Blue Jays. Find out if there will be fireworks at Rogers Center at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, exclusively on Peacock this Sunday. That is a very, very fun matchup there.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So I think an interesting situation is the Marlins. We mentioned them a few minutes ago. But the Marlins, they're right in the thick of the playoff race here. A.J. Puck blew another save yesterday. Now has a 9.82 ERA in July with four home runs allowed. Tanner Scott actually gave up the go-ahead run on Saturday against the Rockies, but that was the first run he had allowed all month. He's been dominant. Has a 2.81 ERA for the year. Tanner Scott only rostered in 22% of Yahoo leagues. I saw him picked up in a couple of my leagues this weekend. And with the Marlins, where every win means so much, I think we could see that job change hands here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they have come out and said that they're trying to play matchups with, you know, with Puck and Scott and put them in situations that, you know, best fit their skill sets. You know, Puck was really good for all of June, really, and has struggled a bit of late. So I'm not fully willing to give up on him. To me, it makes sense for the Marlins to, you know, make a move for a right-handed reliever, right? I mean, I've never been huge on Dylan Floro. I know he's still there, but you got Puck and Scott, who are both lefties. If you're trying to compete, you know, you might want to find a righty who can close games for you. Not that the Mets would trade them David Robertson, but, you know, that's a name that gets floated out there. Yep. The Tigers have Alex Lang. You know, there are some guys like that. The Royals have Scott Barlow.
Bednar with the Pirates. It would take a lot for Bednar to be traded, but he should be on the block. I feel he should be.
And, you know, the Mariners, if the Mariners fall out of it, there's a lot of, like, just right-handed relievers in that pen that they, you know, could look to move so they can hold, you know, hold on to Munoz for future years, stuff like that. So I'm willing to have both Scott and Puck on my roster. I think they're both they both have upside and ability to string together some saves. I would also just acknowledge that in 3 weeks there might be another name to add into that mix, and so, you know, you're just kind of playing rotating chairs right now. Musical chairs. That's the game, not rotating chairs. It's called musical chairs.
No. So why don't you give us a sneak preview? Tuesdays, Eric does a pitching article on rotoworld.com. So you see it tomorrow. Why don't you give our listeners just a quick glimpse into what you're thinking for this week?
Yeah. So it'll feature four pitchers who have made some intriguing pitch mix changes over the last, you know, I try to keep it as like a three start sample. Two of them are young starters. Two of them are kind of veterans who have seen increased performance. I guess I'll just tease with the first two are Chase Silseth and Steven Matz. And so Silseth is a guy who doesn't have three starts of performance to analyze, because he came up last week from the minor leagues. They called him up to start against the Yankees, and he did really well. He had 10 strikeouts in 5 2/3 innings, gave up four hits, just one earned run, had a 42% whiff rate, a 45% CSW. And a big reason for that was he started throwing this, you know, StatCast still calls it a slider, but it is kind of like a big sweeping curveball, as opposed to the cutter and the tighter slider he was throwing earlier. And that pitch just was ridiculous for Silseth against the Yankees. Had a 25.6% swinging strike rate. He threw it 46% of the time. So, you know, that's kind of like a pretty eye-opening pitch that now we just want to see how the rest of the arsenal shakes out there. But again, we talked about the Angels and them kind of falling out of contention. There's really no reason that they don't give him a little bit of leash. 23 years old, you know, has been really good in the minor leagues.
Yeah,
they've yo-yoed him back and forth between reliever and starter. And I think that there's some upside there for him as a starter. And the next guy is Steven Matz, who I feel like is constantly talked about as like, oh, Steven Matz, you know, it's the sleeper, or Steven Matz going to break out, and it never happens. And, you know from watching the Mets all the time, it's like maddeningly inconsistent has kind of been the MO for his career. But he's been really good since moving into the starting rotation again. They had him again in the bullpen for a little bit. He's up to changeup usage. The changeup is his best swing and miss pitch. It's actually just his best pitch in general. So that's been really good for him over the last couple of starts, has really kind of improved the strikeout numbers. He's got 19 strikeouts over those last three starts, which is just in 14 and two-thirds innings. And again, another team where maybe they're showcasing him for a trade. You know, the Cardinals seem to be selling. Who knows where he winds up? Maybe he winds up in a good pitcher's park. Maybe he winds up with a team that can optimize his, you know, arsenal a little bit. Matz to me is somebody where I'm just going to ride the hot streak for now. I think that there's a change that's led to some success. I don't know how long it's going to last, but you know, he gets Arizona, which isn't a phenomenal start, but not one I'm like running away from. And then we'll see where it goes from there. But those are two of the four guys. So make sure you check out the article tomorrow for the other two.
Awesome. Very good. Brandon Pfaadt came back to the majors over the weekend. Gave up three runs in six innings, struck out six, walked none against the Reds. So pretty decent start there. All three runs allowed, though, were home runs. So he's now allowed 12 home runs in 31 and two-thirds major league innings. I think it's dangerous, but we saw enough on Saturday. I think he had a rough first inning. Then he was like awesome for four innings and then the home run. So I'm still a little nervous to use him, but at least a step in the right direction.
I think the team has been clear that they expect home runs. It's kind of just part of the way he pitches. You know, the fastball doesn't really miss a lot of bats. And when it gets hit, gets hit hard. But the changeup and the sweeper both looked really good. And that, you know, that changeup looked better than I had seen it in the past. So that's intriguing to me. But I think it's always going to be a risky option. There's always that risk for a blow up when you've got a guy who every hard hit ball could turn into a home run.
That feels like Max Scherzer these days too. Four home runs.
Yeah, that was
gave up against the Red Sox on.
Well, recently ran into red hot Tristan Casas.
Yes. So
what are you gonna do?
But yeah, from start to start, I don't know what to expect from Max Scherzer at this point. And you know, Verlander's been better recently, but it's not the Verlander. And I do wonder with these older pitchers, like, you know, the pitch clock, when you're 38, 39 and you're trying to be max effort ish.
Yeah,
that's got to be tough for a pitcher who's been in the majors for, you know, 15 years.
And Scherzer's talked about it. I mean, he hasn't, you know, he's mentioned like the strategic element, which he finds interesting about, you know, now like calling his own game and stuff a little bit. But he's been pretty vocal that he's not a huge fan of being forced to work as quickly as he's being forced to work. So I think that's a component to it. Listen, I don't think the Mets would be crazy to float his name out there at the trade deadline. I don't know that you could get rid of both Verlander and Scherzer because you don't have a rotation for next year. And very clearly the Mets are going to try to run it back next year and contend. But if you got rid of one of them, you know, we know that Steve Cohen's going to spend money in the offseason because that's, you know, his MO. And I think that we might be seeing the decline for Scherzer. He's still like a pitcher and he's still talked about how he's, you know, really relying on sequencing and mixing in his breaking balls. And he's not just going to overpower hitters anymore. And he has the mental aptitude and understanding of how to maximize his stuff at this, you know, without having, you know, the raw stuff that he used to, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to go back to being a low three ERA pitcher. Like he can maximize the stuff as best he can, but if it's more hittable stuff, then you're always going to run into teams that are going to get you.
Right. Right. The Giants were mentioned as a possibility for Verlander over the weekend. John Morosi of MLB.com floated them as a possibility. I could see that. I think we know the teams that are sellers. I think we know the logical names who could be dealt in the next week. You know, Marcus Stroman, like Lucas Giolito, guys like that. But maybe we'll be surprised here. There are a lot of hurdles to trading a Verlander or Scherzer, but maybe we'll be surprised.
I mean, I think the most logical fit to me in my head, which it won't happen in reality because they're not that aggressive, but it's the Baltimore Orioles. Mm-hmm. Because they need a frontline starter. I really like Tyler Wells. I really like Kyle Bradish. But if you're going into a playoff series, it's not ideal. Grayson Rodriguez, we know, has the ability to be one, but he's 23 years old. He's not leading that rotation right now. And if you want to talk about another team that has just like a plethora of hitters and hitting prospects that they can't possibly, you know, fit into the lineup,
right?
It's the Orioles. And the Orioles also have some arms too. You know, they've got they've got Drew Rahm, who's a 23-year-old lefty in AAA, who's pitching really well this year, but is behind DL Hall for them just as a prospect within the Orioles organization. They've got some intriguing infielders, you know, with Joey Ortiz. You've got, you know, Kyle Stowers and Heston Kjerstad in AAA, who are behind Colton Cowser, who's still not even playing all the time in the major league level. So, you know, it seems like this is the year for the Orioles to try to make a move. I don't see an AL team that makes me go, the Orioles can't make it to the World Series. The Orioles with frontline starter have a chance to make a real run.
I feel like the Orioles also are, if they make a trade for a pitcher, I don't think they're necessarily looking at a rental. I think if they're going to trade one of these prospects who are not like the big name prospects, but kind of like the quality depth in any other organization, they would probably be more highly touted. I think they would get a player where they would at least have control next year,
right?
A couple of years, something like that. That would be their ideal situation.
Yeah. And the reality is like Scherzer has a player option for next year. I believe it's like $34 million or something. That has historically or recent history been out of the price range of what Baltimore wants to spend. So I don't know that it actually lines up in that sense. I just feel like it could, right? Yeah. If the ownership was just like, yeah, we'll take Scherzer next year too. We'll see how it goes. Like they have the money to make those moves. They just have to decide they want to spend that money.
And I feel like on the Mets side of things, they would also, if the right player is coming back, they would probably pay. I don't know if you can actually pay toward a player option, but they would do what they could to make it happen financially too, obviously. So let's, before we go, let's take a look at weekend fab. We already mentioned it a little bit, but I actually made a bid on Sal Frelick in my TGFBI league. I had the highest bid, 45. I have enough to spend where... Yeah. I didn't feel too bad about it. The runner-up was 13, which I think puts in perspective where we are at this point of the year. So I needed a boost offensively because I had Jared Kelnick, and as we know, he kicked a water cooler.
He did do that.
And he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. So somebody to plug in into my outfield there. Kyle Finnegan was picked up with Hunter Harvey hurt. He's going to play a lot. Trey Cabbage got a pretty high bid as well. I know you like him.
Love
Wilmer Flores was picked up. Kevin Ginkle, who is, I think, maybe the fourth or fifth closer the Diamondbacks have used this season. But he's on a nice run recently, too. So some of the popular names I've seen.
Yeah, I picked up Ginkle in TGFBI. I picked him up in one other league as well. Not only did he get the last two save opportunities and converted, but like, he's been pretty good on the year, 2.39 ERA. The strikeouts are down from what we've seen in the past from him. But, you know, I'll take not a lot of strikeouts if I'm getting solid ratios and saves. And I think he's the guy for now, as you mentioned. who knows how that will go. The big one in TGFBI, I had the money. I landed Christian Encarnacion Strand. Just, I'm going to take a swing. I feel like, you know, he has gotten that kind of strikeout rate a little bit under control in AAA so far in his MLB games. That has also remained. It's pretty clear that the Reds are just rotating guys to keep everybody, you know, in the lineup for most of the games during the week. If they move India, maybe that's more full-time reps for Encarnacion Strand, who has kind of like game-breaking, you know, home run ability in fantasy league. So I like that move. And I also added in a couple 15-team leagues, I added Luis Medina, who I wrote about last week, and then he went out and had a really good performance against the Astros too.
He did, yeah.
And Medina's somebody I posted a video on Twitter today, so you could check that out on my Twitter account, which is at SamskyNYC. But basically, like, Medina, you know, he now throws a sinker that gets really good ratings on Stuff Plus, and he can actually command it better than he can command his fastball. He's added a slider. He added a slider in May, which he's continued to kind of tweak. Basically, three quarters of his arsenal is new as of like the middle of May. And so it took him a while to figure it out. And I think he's figuring it out. And, you know, I wouldn't add him in 12s yet. But I think that he's intriguing. And then I stashed in a 12-team where I'm a 12-team OC where I'm leading right now. I stashed Chris Sale, figuring, you know, he threw a bullpen session again over the weekend. This week he's facing live batters, and then that will go to a rehab assignment. So probably like mid-August for Sale, but you know, that gets you a month and a half of starts with the Red Sox on the periphery of the playoff race right now. So I think they're going to use him to end the year.
So in my Tout Wars mixed draft, let's see, Ginkle was the top bid of the week among pickups. But then from there, Michael Grove, Wilmer Flores, Chase Silseth, who you mentioned, Tanner Scott, Randall Grichuk is a decent play this week, I think, power-wise, in that Rockies lineup, gets some games at Coors Field. So that's just kind of a smaller group of players being bid on at this point, because there's a lot of teams out of the race. But
yeah,
if you have some fab dollars left, you can definitely – it can go a bit further than it did a couple of months ago.
Michael Grove is somebody who may be written about in future iterations of the Pitch Mix article I'm doing. He just missed this one. Because we'll see if he sticks in the rotation. But he added a cutter on June 23rd. It was the first time he threw a cutter. And then his last start, the cutter was his second most used pitch. He was throwing it 30% of the time. And, you know, it doesn't miss a lot of bats, but it induces soft contact. And he's abandoned his sinker. And so he's kind of four seam cutter curveball now. But, you know, just a younger pitcher. I mean, he's 26, but young in terms of MLB experience, who's adjusting and tweaking the arsenal in a good organization that's clearly involved in making those changes with him. So I think that's something to look out for in deeper leagues is, you know, I don't know how long Grove sticks in that rotation, but he's making changes and seeing some success from it.
Right. The Dodgers could acquire a starting pitcher at the trade deadline. I think probably a logical team to look for a veteran arm added there, whether it's going to be a Giolito, not sure about that. They certainly have the prospects to do it if they want to, but I think they're going to get some depth in this rotation. And remember, there's no August waiver trade deadline anymore, so this is the shot for teams to go out and get players. So I don't think this is going to be the most exciting trade deadline ever. There's not going to be a Juan Soto trade, but I still think there's going to be fantasy relevant stuff coming
for sure
out of the next week, all of the fallout involved there. So we will see you next week for our next episode, talking all about the trade deadline, all the fallout involved with that. Remember to subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts. You can actually find all your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports. Definitely check out the Roto-World Football Show with training camp getting underway. Fantasy football prep already in progress. Also, follow us on Twitter if you don't already. Eric is at SamskyNYC on Twitter. I'm at DJ Short. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.